From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy.
The protest was peaceful up until the police started stampeding towards the crowd of peaceful protesters. I saw things were getting out of hand when the police started stampeding towards us, so I started recording.
My mom was in the house, and my son, Chinar, who was 6 at the time, he's now 14. They killed him in front of him and my mom.
Diabolical killings of African Americans by police is part of a heritage that began from a police department that has its roots as slave catchers.
Police unions have taken it upon themselves to become the protectors of police officers who commit the most brutal and disgusting offenses.
We should not be idolizing Confederates, racists, any more than we should be idolizing Nazis.
Medical professionals are very concerned that exposure to tear gas will result in long-term health consequences.
Was the lockdown against the coronavirus all a fake?
COVID, Race, and Democracy is a collective effort by producers from the Pacifica Network and radio affiliates. The series focuses on vital issues touching community members who listen to Pacifica Radio. Today's edition is presented by WBAI New York. I'm your host, Gloria J. Brown Marshall. I am a professor of constitutional law at John Jay College, City University of New York, the author of Race, Law, and American Society, as well as the book, The Voting Rights War. I'm a playwright and sometime poet. We look at killings by police in plain view, reminiscent of lynchings of the past, and hear from a protester who was accosted by NYPD officers during an uprising in Brooklyn over the George Floyd murder in Minnesota, as well as the many other civilian killings by police across the nation. Sapphire speaks out on racism and policing in the time of COVID-19, and Professor Michio Kaku debunks myths about COVID. All that and more, but first, these news headlines with Paul D'Arienzo.
Thanks, Gloria. The Supreme Court has ruled 650,000 undocumented immigrants brought to the United States as children and known as Dreamers can stay. The court ruled 5-4 with Chief Justice John Roberts writing the majority decision, rejecting the Trump administration's attempt to dismantle the program known as DACA. It was the second defeat this week for Trump, who tweeted his displeasure, claiming the decision was a shotgun blast in the face of conservatives. Without a reason, he linked the court's ruling to the Second Amendment right to possess firearms and then his reelection bid. Thousands of DACA recipients are essential workers in hospitals and other healthcare facilities on the front line in the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. And hours after the Fulton County District Attorney announced murder and other charges against a former Atlanta police officer, a number of officers called in sick. The Blue Flu, an unofficial labor action by cops, was apparently prompted by charges against police officer Garrett Rolfe, who was charged with shooting an unarmed black man, Rayshard Brooks, in the back. Rolfe's partner, Devin Brosnan, has become a cooperating witness, a rare breach of the blue wall of silence when cops refuse to testify against fellow officers. And another 1.5 million Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week. That means about 45.7 million people have applied for unemployment since the COVID-19 crisis began 3 months ago. It's not all bad news, as experts say the recovery has been steady, if shaky. In August, the $600 per month extended unemployment benefits under the CARES Act are scheduled to run out. And Governor Andrew Cuomo reports New York saw a 0.9% rate of positive coronavirus cases after testing 70,000 people in a single day. Lowest percent of positives since we started, says Cuomo. The governor urged vigilance. Other states that reopened earlier and quicker than New York continue to report higher infection rates and COVID-19 deaths. Phase 2 in New York City's reopening is scheduled to start Monday. Mayor de Blasio unveiled an executive order today expanding restaurant seating to sidewalks, curb lanes, plazas, and open streets. The plan requires an 8-foot clear path between seating and the curb, social distancing, and traffic barriers. As part of Phase 2, city playgrounds will also reopen on Monday, with social distancing ambassadors out across the city to monitor the playgrounds and remind people to remain 6 feet away from each other. No team sports, including basketball, football, soccer, and softball, will be allowed for now. An arrest warrant has been issued in the murder of a black transgender woman in Philadelphia last week. 36-year-old Akhenaten Jones could be responsible for the killing of Dominique Remy Fels, 27 years old. Fels was believed to be the 13th transgender murder victim in the United States this year. I'm Paul D'Arienzo for Pacifica Radio, New York.
You are listening to COVID, Race and Democracy over Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Gloria J. Brown Marshall. This week, a noose was spotted in Harlem's Marcus Garvey Park. Marcus Garvey, of course, we know, was a civil rights activist, someone who stood up and championed black rights internationally. New York Governor Cuomo says he was disgusted that it is, quote, the epitome of hatred and an evil icon of our nation's racist past, end quote. 4 days after the noose was found, he ordered an investigation by the New York State Police Hate Crimes Task Force. He called this noose an immoral and illegal act. The noose in a neighborhood park is an ugly reminder that the spirit of lynching lives on each day in acts of brutality against black and brown people by white supremacists and by police. Those bad police officers, the rogue police officers, and we know that many of them, most of them, go into policing to help people. But they know who the rogue cops are, and someone knows who left that noose. In my weekly program on WBAI, Law of the Land, I speak about lynching and anti-lynching laws which failed to pass over the many years in which thousands of people were brutally murdered, burned alive, hanged, their bodies left hanging from trees, charred pieces displayed in store windows. That is part of America's history.
Anyone can see that the lynching of more than 4,000 people over the history of this country reveals a sin that makes a lie out of America's claim of liberty and justice for all. Too many people abated or accepted this brutality. Too many people acquiesced to heinous forms of murder as a code of vigilante justice. Too many law enforcement officers and prosecutors remained silent. Some were even complicit. Anyone can see that lynching needs to be a crime punished by the full weight of federal law. There is anti-lynching legislation. That's my quote. Go to NBCnews.com and you will read my op-ed piece that was published on June 15th. June 15th, 100th anniversary of the lynching of three men in Minnesota, Duluth, Minnesota. Their names, Elias Clayton, Elmer Jackson, and Isaac McGee. Each life taken by that mob of nearly 10,000 white men converged on Duluth. They need to be remembered for their innocence and their shame. Why? Because it was the lie of a white woman and her boyfriend. It's assumed they had sex and wanted to cover it up. What we don't know is, and what most people don't know, for a woman to get an illegal abortion back then, before Roe versus Wade, and this is something I'm telling you as an editorial, you can go, as I said, and read my op-ed piece, but you need to know that back then, if a woman claimed she was raped by a black man, then she could get an illegal abortion. They would ask her that question. There's so much that needs to be said about this lynching of three men in Minnesota. The white woman who lied, Irene Tuscan is her name, who falsely accused them of rape to cover up her own sexual activity. I end this op-ed piece with the idea that we must fight for anti-lynching legislation. This is so much that could be done, that cannot be done. There is one person right now standing in the way who represents those other anti-lynching legislation advocates, Rand Paul of Kentucky. Rand Paul is the sole obstacle at this point, and that's why this anti-lynching legislation has not come to the floor for debate. And we have our guest, Philip Dre, the author of At the Hands of Persons Unknown, a book about the Southern horrors of lynching. Thank you so much, Professor Dre, for joining me.
Oh, glad to be here.
You've had an opportunity to see your work come round robin again. It seems that we get to this point of speaking of lynching in America without actually passing federal legislation. But I also want to get back to something, because I claim, and so many others do as well, that the murder of George Floyd was a lynching. It was spectacle. It was in broad daylight in front of people while Officer Chauvin was being videotaped, put his hand in his pocket. And like many of the images people can see to this day of people in their vests and suit coats, smiling with their hands in their pockets, having done their job well, I'm assuming for the protection of the community. Compare and contrast, if you might, the George Floyd killing that people, myself being included, claim is a lynching, with the more, you know, fantastic ones, you can say, and not in a good way, of 1,000 people. You know, it's always a stronger show of force. It's not 100, 1,000 on one person. Mm-hmm. We have here the show of force of four police officers with guns and one person. But could you compare the two?
I share your impression. When I saw the videotape, I thought to myself, I've just watched a lynching. That is what it looked like. I felt that was the experience of it. And you're correct in many ways. It had many of the same features that we associate with lynching.
I thank you so much for joining me, Philip Dre, and his book is At the Hands of Persons Unknown, The Lynching of Black America. He is a professor and a historian, civil rights historian. Thank you so much, Philip.
Thank you, Gloria. Take care.
Next on COVID, Race and Democracy, Dwanya Zayer. She was at a protest against police brutality in Brooklyn, where she was pushed, shoved, and knocked down by NYPD officers. Cell phone video of the incident went viral. The 20-year-old was hospitalized with a concussion as a result of the encounter with police officers. Zayer spoke out this week at a hearing into police interaction with protesters held by the New York State Attorney General, Tish James.
I attended the protest on Friday night, May 29th, 2020, because I wanted to show my support towards George Floyd, his mourning family members, the Black Lives Matter movement, and every individual who has ever been a victim of police brutality. The meaning behind the protest was and still is very important to me. The protest was peaceful up until the police started stampeding towards the crowd of peaceful protesters. I saw things were getting out of hand when the police started stampeding towards us, so I started recording. And that's when a video that has gone viral has started, where I I'm running backwards in the direction that the police are telling us to go to. And Vincent D'Andrea and his commander, Craig Edelman, are walking in my direction. And Vincent D'Andrea tells me to move. And he tells me to get out of the street. And I ask why, while still moving in the direction that he was telling me to move in. And he smacked my phone out of my hand. He broke my phone. He cracked the edges. I had a right to record, and he destroyed my property. Then, not even a split second later, he called me a stupid bitch. I'm sorry for my language, but if a cop in uniform can say it, I should be able to say it. And then he shoved me with as much force as he could. I flew out of my shoe and smacked the back of my head on the concrete. Protesters came to help me. about 5 minutes went by and I had a seizure and had to go to the hospital in an ambulance. Since then, I have had a concussion. I'm nauseous. My back hurts. I've had consistent migraines and I can't hold down food. I can't sleep. And I can't stop thinking about what happened to me and what I saw unfold that night. Officer Vincent D'Andrea insulted me, and then he assaulted me, and then he walked away proud of his action. He never intended on arresting me. He never gave me a warning. He never looked back to make sure if I was okay. Another officer looked back to make sure I was still on the ground, and then they kept walking. There were hundreds of officers around, and not a single officer helped me. Not a single officer stopped the officer who assaulted me. Commander Craig Edelman is a commander, and he was right behind Vincent D'Andrea when I was assaulted. I think that Vincent D'Andrea uses his badge and uniform to take his anger out on civilians without feeling like he'll receive consequences, and then Commander Craig Edelman is allowing that to happen. Vincent D'Andrea has been suspended. I don't understand why suspension is even like in the picture. He needs to be fired. He committed a clear and cut assault in uniform on video with no. What is suspension? Commander Craig Edelman has been transferred as if that's a punishment. I feel like this is not correct. If you see something that you claim is wrong, because this was traumatizing, and this was physically, emotionally, and mentally overwhelming. And I'm only one of many people. So the fact that I went viral and the public response or whatever who was in charge was to transfer Commander Craig Edelman to a different community, as if that community deserves to have a commander that will not give a watch. What, and Vincent D'Andrea being suspended so that, you know, the publicity can go away and then they can bring him back to do the same thing over and over again. Where the hell is the humanity in watching these officers assault a human for no reason? Because I'm not well, and I know many other protesters aren't well. And these are the people who are supposed to be protecting us, and they did nothing to protect anyone in the protest that I saw. That is all.
Ms. Ayer, I'm sorry for your incident. And I just want you to know that the officers involved, unfortunately, really don't reflect the vast majority of the officers in NYPD.
What about thousands of officers that witnessed the assault and did nothing? Because there were dozens of officers. That was normal for them. They were completely normalized by that. And I've seen many other protesters be severely injured. And again, nobody like reacts when the protester gets injured. So, like, again, I'm not seeing it. It does. I understand there are good cops, but where was the good cop to help me? Where was the good cop for George Floyd? Where was the good cop for Brad Levy Ayala, who got shot in the head with a rubber bullet and not a single officer came to help him? Where are the good cops that I keep hearing of?
Well, I tell you, strange things are happening. If it's racial profiling, but the popo these days they show calling. Your hands up and they're still shooting. Could somebody please listen to my plea? Officers, take heed. I can't breathe. History will always remember these last words of Eric Gardner. I can't breathe. Sun future. Well, I tell you, strange things are happening. We don't know if it's racial profiling, but the popo these days they're chokeholding.
Your hands up and they're still shooting. Could somebody please listen to my plea? Officers, take heed.
I can't breathe, I can't breathe.
History we'd always remember. These last words of Eric Gardner.
I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe.
Racism stops permanently. Well, I tell you, strange things are happening. We don't know if it's racial profiling, but the poor police, they still chokeholding. Your hands up and they still shooting. Could somebody please listen to my plea?
And you're listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy over Pacifica Radio. Next up, WBAI host of Caribbean Voices and Beyond, Isaac Ferguson, with his weekly commentary.
Are these protests in the streets as to how the police across this nation has been inflicting brutality on the public would have been dealt with long, long ago? George Floyd's death has brought all of that into focus, but not just George Floyd's death, a changing population where the young people of this country, both black and white, are less constrained by past resentments and less afraid of the new fears that this government, this administration, has been pushing and promoting and trying to use as blackmail to get them to look the other way, to get them to continue to support government administration that is focused primarily on serving the wealthy and on the business of making money rather than the development and investment in the people of the country. The young people don't want to hear it. The young people want to know why. They are asking why. The culture has changed. The music played a big part in that. Sports have played a lot in that. It has allowed the young people of the country to see each other more closely, to know each other more closely. And so they are out in the streets, even the most remote areas of the country where there are no blacks living. There are young whites, boys and girls and young women and men out there with signs that say Black Lives Matter. And I can imagine their grandfathers and fathers who come from the past generation and who are still hanging on to things like white supremacy saying to them, well, how could you know Black Lives Matter? You don't even know any black people. We've kept the neighborhood white. We've sent you to all white schools just to keep these blacks out. How do you know their lives matter? You don't know any blacks. Song's absurd, doesn't it? Well, that's what it is. It's absurd. That's how it songs to the young population here. And increasingly, it's putting folks like our president, Mr. Donald Trump, way out of touch, way alienated from the mainstream of the society, from the young people of the society, and what they're thinking and what they're doing. Right here in New York, Governor Cuomo signed the repeal of 50-A, a section of New York law dating back to 1976 that allowed police, fire, and the correction departments to keep the disciplinary records of their personnel secret, under wraps, so that the public cannot know. Governor Cuomo said enough. We have to thank George Floyd for that. Governor Cuomo said there is no trust, or there is a breach of trust, and that has to be restored. Talk about breach of trust. Which young black person in this town has trusted the police? I have had my beating from the police, and so have many of us. And that beating has affected my life in many ways. Just beating me bad for nothing. I was just parking a car. But there is hope. I feel hopeful, and I hope that my listeners feel hopeful, because across the country, we're seeing action. Governor Cuomo has also given the near 500 police departments across New York State until April 1, 2021, to develop systems to address systematic racism in their ranks. He said that if a department does not follow through, they will be stripped of state funding. Out in Minneapolis, the police chief said that he has stopped negotiating with the police union. Police unions have taken it upon themselves to become the protectors of police officers who commit the most brutal and disgusting offenses. They do not fight for more pay for their workers, or they would support democratic platforms that are pro-government, that are pro-working class. Instead, they support Republican administration after Republican administration that's for giving less to the working class of the country. Those organizations see their unions battling in favor of Republican politicians. Why? A matter of power, a matter of getting protection, so that when they brutalize people, when they indulge in behavior that's not law enforcement, that's not legally permitted use of force, but rather violence, the realm of criminals and thugs and antisocial individuals who hate the society or simply does not care about their community. When the police indulge in that, then the unions step forward to defend them. When they're taken into disciplinary action behind closed doors, the union officials are there to place their thumb on the scales and battle against any progressive measure that would seek to ameliorate the brutality or the lawlessness of the police. So we have to thank George Floyd for that.
Isaac Ferguson, WBAI, host of Caribbean Voices and Beyond. There are many examples of lawlessness by police, many deaths of people of color. Ramarlee Graham was 18 years old when he was shot and killed by an NYPD officer in his own home in the Bronx in front of his little brother and grandmother. We hear from his mother, Constance Malcolm, at a Stolen Lives gathering of family members affected by police violence in New York City. WBAI's own Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash were there and filed this report.
The victims of police murder cannot speak for themselves, but we can, and we will, and we won't rest until our loved ones receive justice and all policing policies and practices like the walls of Jericho come crumbling down, said Constance Malcolm, the mother of Ramarlee Graham, who along with dozens of family members came to New York City Hall to protest over stolen lives, those killed by law enforcement.
My mom was in the house, and my son, Chinar, he was 6 at the time. He's now 14. They killed him in front of him and my mom. Chinar called his sister at work and told her that they killed Ramarlee, and he didn't want her to come home and saw what happened to her brother. So he was calling her to tell her what happened before she gets home. There's no way a young kid at that age should ever experience anything like that. But you know why I fight? I fight because of them. Officer Ace was allowed to walk because our mayor refused to fire him. This is why Mayor de Blasio has to go. He must resign now. There's two murder on his watch, and he keeps on defending these officers. We put him in office. We're going to make sure he come up before his time. I have one question for Mayor de Blasio. Kiara was protesting the other day, and she got arrested. And you were so upset that the leaked that she was arrested. Yeah. But your NYPD people been doing that for years and get away with it. For years they've been doing it and get away with it. Kiara was out there protesting, and she has all right to protest because she's a black woman. Yeah. She has all right. But I want to ask Mayor de Blasio, would it be okay if a cop bash her upside the head like they were doing to the protester? Would he still stand behind the cops? Would he still stand behind her when they shoot a rubber bullet at her? Would he still stand by when they mace her? Tear gas her, would he still stand with them? When are you going to stand up? I have some backbone. My son don't need to go to school and police harass him in school. That's not why I send him to school. I send him to learn. We want guidance counselor. We want nurses. We want PPE for nurses, like myself on the front line. Stand with the families and demand that they cut NYPD budget by $1 billion. Thank you. July 1st, $1 billion. Who keeps us safe?
We keep us safe.
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 You're listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy on Pacifica Radio, presented by WBAI New York. Protests across the country following the murder of George Floyd have elevated the demands to defund and abolish the police. This comes on the heels of a nationwide resurgence of a movement for community control of police led by the National Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese, who host Clearing the Fog, Forces of Greed on WBAI and WPFW, speak with author and activist Max Rameau of Pan-Africa Community Action.
I think this is a very important moment in history for a number of reasons. Obviously, when oppressed people have had enough and are willing to stand up and fight back, that is always an important moment, and it becomes historic. I think the other thing that makes this important and historic is the fact that right now we meaning really severely oppressed Black, Latino, Indigenous, and LGBTQ communities have secured a number of allies in this fight. And I think for the first time in a long time, we have a chunk of the white community, the relatively privileged white community, who recognize in a real way, in a real tangible way, not that they can live it, not that they experience it, not that they're thinking about every moment of the day, but they're recognizing that there's something wrong and there's something fundamentally dangerous about being a Black person and poor in the United States. And that means that we have the potential to build a real powerful and strong movement where it's just not us against the world, a small group of oppressed people against the world, but a significant chunk, if not the majority of the society, say the way things have been going is not normal, it's not right, and we are willing to change it. And some people are even willing to change it in spite of the fact that they know they will lose some of their privilege.
Max Rameau is a Haitian-born Pan-African theorist, campaign strategist, organizer, and co-author with Netfa Freeman of an upcoming book, Community Control Over Police. Social protest over systemic racism came just as many began adjusting to a new way of living due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The use of tear gas on protesters by police is dangerous and can increase the risks and severity of the virus. Here's Patty and Doug Wood from Green Street.
It's very concerning, and I'm not the only one who is concerned. Many of my medical colleagues are very worried because, one, this is already an at-risk population, and we already see that this population has had much more severe outcomes from COVID-19. And now being exposed to the tear gas, it's very dangerous because we know it does have immediate health effects as well as long-term health effects, depending on how long you are exposed to it.
That's Dr. Purvi Parikh, an allergy and immune system specialist at NYU Langone Medical Center in New York City.
For example, just for my own specialty, it can be very detrimental to your lungs. It can cause inflammation in your lungs, cause wheezing, coughing. And we also know COVID-19 attacks the lungs. And we know African Americans and especially those in certain areas of New York City have some of the worst rates of asthma in the country, and some would argue in the world. So you're basically setting up a perfect storm, unfortunately, to put an at-risk group even more at risk. And, you know, while I completely agree with the message behind the protest, I also worry that since we're in the midst of a pandemic and people are closer together, social distancing also becomes very difficult, you know. So now, you know, we have, unfortunately, the tear gas, plus the other worry about the spread of the virus itself. And outside of the lungs, we know it can affect the eyes, it can affect your skin, there can be neurological effects. And who I worry most about is children, because I am seeing children at these protests. Like, their bodies are still developing, their brains, their immune systems, everything. So they could have long-term side effects of this tear gas exposure that we don't even know about, because this is an unprecedented thing that's going on.
That's Dr. Purvi Parikh, an allergy and immune system specialist at NYU Langone Medical Center. A perfect storm, she called it. A massive social uprising against the targeting of African Americans by law enforcement. A worldwide pandemic disease spread by aerosol droplets. And a police force using tear gas that causes long-term health problems and increases the risk of COVID-19 among the very population that is already suffering. But perhaps change is on the way. A judge in Seattle recently banned the use of tear gas by police there, and a group of legislators in Washington, including New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have proposed legislation that would ban the use of tear gas by police and cut federal funding to agencies that refuse to comply. It's hard to imagine that we need a law to prevent police from using a chemical weapon that's been banned for use in warfare around the world. But then again, many things that go on in this country are hard for us to understand. For WBAI, Patty and Doug Wood from Green Street.
Protests and growing national outcries continue. George Floyd.
Last night, people protesting in Minneapolis escalated as demonstrators were lashed by tear gas and rubber bullets.
The main message here
is that they want to see those officers involved.
They want to see those officers arrested.
Officers arrested.
Trade my 4x4 for GC3, ain't no more freeless feet. I gave him chance again, I even told him please. I find it crazy the police to shoot you and know that you dead, but still tell you to freeze. I seen what I seen, I guess that mean hold him down if he say he can't breathe. It's too many mothers just grieving, they killing us for no reason. Been going on for too long to get even. Throw us in cages like dogs and hyenas. I went to court and they sent me to prison. My mama was crushed when they said I can't leave. First I was drunk, then I sobered up quick when I heard all that time that they gave to Talib. He got a life sentence plus. We just some products of our environment, how they gon' blame us? You can't fight fire with fire, I know, but at least we can turn off the flames some. Every color person ain't dumb, and all whites not racist. I be judging by the mind and heart, I ain't really in the face. So the way that we living is not getting better, you gotta know how to survive. Crazy, I had to tell all of my loved ones to carry a gun when they going outside. Stay in the mirror whenever you drive, overprotect or go crazy for mine. You gotta pay attention to the sign, seem like the blind following the blind. Thinking about everything that's going on, I boost security up in my home. I'm with my kind, they right or they wrong. I call him now, he'll pick up the phone, and it's 5 a.m, he waking up on it. Tell him wherever I'm at, then they coming. I see blue lights, I get scared and start running. That be crazy, they supposed to protect us. Swords and handcuffs and arrest us. Why they go home at night, that's disaster. Knowing we needed help, they neglect us. One of them who gon' make them respect us. I can see in your eye that you fed up. F*** around, got my shot, I won't let up. They know that we a problem together. They know that we can storm anywhere. It's bigger than black and white. It's a problem with the whole way of life. It can't change overnight. But we gotta start somewhere, might as well go ahead, start here. We done had a hell of a year, I'ma make it count why I'm here. God is the only man I fear. Get on going on the front line, he gon' bust your ass. If you come past that gun line, you know when the storm go away, then the sunshine. You gotta put your head in the game when it's crunch time. I want all my sons to grow up to be monsters. I want all my daughters to show out in public. Seem like we losing our country, but we gotta stand up for something. So this what it comes to. Every video I see on my conscience, I got power now, I gotta say something. Corrupt the police been the problem where I'm from. But I'd be lying if I said it was all of them. I ain't do this for the trend, I don't follow them. Altercations with the law, had a lot of them. People speaking for the people, I'm proud of them. Stick together, we can get it up out of them. I can't lie like I don't rap about killing and dope, but I'm telling my young is to vote. I did what I did cause I didn't have no choice and no hope. I was forced to just jump in and go. This is all that we know, but it's time for a change. Got time to be serious, no time for no games. Ain't taking no more, let us go from them chains. God bless they soul, every one of them names. It's bigger than black and white. It's a problem with the whole way of life. It can't change overnight. But we gotta start somewhere. Might as well go ahead, start here. We done had a hell of a year. I'ma make it count why I'm here. God is the only man I fear. They training officers to kill us, then shooting protesters with these rubber bullets. They regular people, I know that they feel us. These scars too deep, they heal us. What happened to COVID? Nobody remember, it ain't making sense. I'm just here to vent. It happened to one of your people, it's different. We get it, the system is wicked, just learn how to pick.
Welcome back to Pacifica's national broadcast, COVID, Race, and Democracy. I am Gloria J. Brown Marshall, journalism professor Sri Srinivasan, host of Coping with COVID, a hopeful, helpful call-in show on WBAI, speaks with Sapphire, poet and author of Push, which went on to become the Oscar-winning film Precious. She says that the coronavirus is pointing out tremendous fault lines in our community where people are not able to follow the Center for Disease Control recommendations, like in Native communities.
This is due to long-standing hatred on some level of the Native American community. So we found the Navajo Nation, 40% of the people are living there without running water, which would make the order to wash your hands as often as possible horrible. Not only did the government not step up, to install plumbing for the nation. The Navajo Nation, we had Doctors Without Borders, which is unheard of in America. Doctors Without Borders was who responded to the Navajo Nation. So I think that is really almost unbelievable, but it happened. It happened. And so that community is being hit particularly hard. What we are also seeing in just here in New York City is that there's this cradle to grave stratification of how the virus is affecting people of color and white people. So not only is it devastating older people in nursing homes, it's evidently twice as many black and brown people are being affected with COVID in nursing homes. So white people are being affected, older white people, but black people are being affected, according to the New York Times, at almost twice the rate of infection. We don't have all the answers to why that is happening. Do African Americans have more comorbidities? But we just know that it is happening. So in my life, I have two friends for the past 40 years who are healthcare workers, who are home attendants, as we call them, but I call them not at home attendants. I call them healthcare workers. They are going in and oftentimes doing things that a nurse would do, changing IV for people, you know, who need it. They are changing diapers. They are doing complex, hard work that other people don't want to do. One of the things that home attendants that I know are telling me, and I just know two, so I don't know a million. How many do you know? Are telling me is that there is no way for them to get the protective equipment that they need. That equipment, when there was a shortage, and there evidently is still a shortage, went first to doctors and nurses. and not to people who were working in nursing homes or who were doing work going into private homes. So there's many disabled people and older people who are saving the government money by living at home and having a healthcare worker come and attend to them, and that's keeping them out of state institutions. But they are not provided with the equipment they need. And now the government has backed away from free testing. And these people who should be tested every time they go into a facility or a home or whatever, they are trying to make the women who earn under $22,000 a year many times pay for their own testing. So all of those things make a difference in who will live and who will die.
And that's so stark and clear in the way you've put it. And I don't think people understand these issues, even though we are obviously seeing new things happening around us. For example, I woke up to the news a couple of days ago that NASCAR, of all sports, is banning Confederate flags. The fact that there's any sport in 2020 that needs to ban Confederate flags is another conversation, but that's progress. We're seeing that Gone with the Wind has been pulled by HBO, will be brought back. HBO Max will be brought back in context, they say. We are seeing Confederate statues in some cities being torn down and tossed away. First of all, your reactions to some of these little signs of change in this country.
I think these are big signs of change. You probably been to Berlin and Germany. You know that in Germany you cannot walk around wearing a swastika. You just cannot. It is against the law. You cannot actively promote the hatred of Jews. You know what I mean? So to have these symbols of in our country of people who tried to overthrow our country. There is no Confederate heroes. The heroes fought against the Union of the United States and wanted to form a separate country. These were people who fought to destroy the Union. Confederates are not heroes. So the just the recognition of that, and we need to stop allowing any segment of our community to publicly and with government sanction idolize Confederates, slaveholders, or anything else. So, and we need to stop allowing any segment of our community to publicly and with government sanction idolize Confederates, slaveholders, or anything else. So if that's what you want to do at home, you have that right at home. You have that right to wear blackface at home while you eat dinner. You have that right to walk around with rifles and have civil rights, civil war reenactments in your backyard. But the state government, national institutions, we should not be idolizing Confederates, racists, any more than we should be idolizing Nazis.
Sapphire, poet and author of Push.
Was the coronavirus weaponized? Was the lockdown against the coronavirus all a fake? And does the virus affect the poor and minority groups disproportionately? Hello, this is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics and host of Exploration, heard weekly on Pacifica Radio. Every week on Exploration, we discuss the cutting-edge issues of science that impact on our lives. And today, I'm going to give you a short summary of the myths and the science behind the coronavirus, one of the greatest pandemics to hit the human race in the last century, starting with some misconceptions about that virus. For example, it's often stated that the COVID-19 virus is an equal opportunity virus. Rich or poor, black or white, male or female, we're all created equally vulnerable to this deadly disease. Well, that's only partly true. The latest analysis of 600,000 cases done by the CDC paints a much darker picture. People with underlying conditions, Many of them, disproportionately from poor and minority groups, are 12 times more vulnerable than those without underlying conditions to the coronavirus. In fact, 33% of coronavirus victims were Hispanic, and 22% were African American. Also, this disparity by race and income can be seen by tracking cell phone data. One can show that people from wealthy areas like New York City had the luxury of leaving in large numbers to go to Florida or the Hamptons in Long Island and to work online. However, people in poor zip codes were forced to work in crowded factory jobs, especially in the food industry, in very close quarters where infections were rampant. So it's no wonder that, because of poverty, racism, limited access to healthcare, a huge fraction of infections have hit minority groups especially hard. Now, some conspiracy theorists have speculated that the virus was weaponized, perhaps in China. But scientists have since analyzed every single gene of that virus, and gene for gene, they've analyzed all its mutations. And what they find is that 96% of the genes of the coronavirus are identical to that found in the horseshoe bat. But the remaining 4% are totally unexpected and novel, totally unlike what a weapon scientist may concoct. Now, one cannot rule out that maybe it escaped accidentally from a virus laboratory in Wuhan, but most likely, most scientists believe that it was a natural mutation. Now, some critics have poo-pooed all of this, stating that perhaps the current pandemic is no more worse than the common flu, which also kills tens of thousands of people. So all this talk of a national catastrophe is a lie, they claim. But the latest numbers show this to be untrue. The common flu, for example, kills about 0.1% of those infected, 0.1%. But the coronavirus kills about 1 to 2%, making it over 10 times more lethal than the common flu. Furthermore, a person infected by the flu can spread it to, on average, about 1.3 other people. However, COVID-19 is much more contagious and can spread to 5 or 6 other people. So the virus spreads exponentially faster than the flu virus and is 10 times more lethal. Now, there is a glimmer of hope here. A genetic analysis of the genes of the coronavirus shows that it has branched into at least 30 different subtypes, but these variations are all relatively minor, and a single vaccine may, in principle, work against all of them. Meanwhile, about 130 groups around the world are racing to find the vaccine. But it will still take months to make sure there are no unexpected side effects of a vaccine. And lastly, we now realize that the virus can spread much more rapidly than we previously thought, even just a few months ago. So if you are going to a rally or a demonstration against racism, for example, even though it's difficult, try to take a few simple extra precautions. Stay outdoors, not indoors. Wear a mask at all times. Separate from others as much as possible by at least 6 feet. And keep a safe distance away from people who are shouting and chanting, because we now know that simply by singing or yelling, you can spread 10,000 droplets, which contain the coronavirus, every minute. So, a few simple precautions may save your life. Well, once again, this is Dr. Michio Kaku for Exploration and Pacifica Radio.
You've been listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy. Thanks to all Pacifica's sister stations and our affiliates who conceived of this production and contribute to the series. This WBAI New York Radio Edition was produced by Linda Perry with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash, Isaac Ferguson, Patty and Doug Wood, Michio Kaku, Srinivasan, Margaret Flowers, with Paul DeRienzo and the Office of the New York State Attorney General. With thanks to Polina Vasilyev and KPFK, and of course, Katia Stitt and WPFW for solidarity and support. I'm your host, Gloria J. Brown Marshall. Thanks for listening. I'll see you on the radio.